Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations. Happy 4th of July week. Here we are, July 2nd, and the weather has finally turned, gotten hot. And speaking of being hot, I have two hotties with me here in the studio in beautiful downtown Exeter. I don't know if they've been called that before or not, but George Marshall is here, director of the Rhode Island International Film Festival. Welcome back, George.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Nice to have you with us. And the amazing Stephen Feinberg is here from the Rhode Island TV and film,
and TV office. Happy to be here. So happy that the air conditioner is on and we're cooler than we are.
He's going to go out with a swelled head now that he knows how hot
we're not
he
hot.
Is.
Well, it's great to have you both back. It's been a while for Stephen, and George has been a fairly regular in his attendance, but we'd always like to see more of him. We're going to find out about the summer blockbusters, and we're going to do that by talking about some of these movies that have come around and what's new in the Rhode Island area for TV and film. Let's start with you, Stephen, since we haven't seen you for a while. What is new in the Rhode Island TV and film industry?
Well, Mike, good question. Yesterday, we received word that The Polka King, the Jack Black film that we filmed here last summer, is being picked up by Netflix. And we plan to have a screening, hopefully at the end of the summer. It's a terrific movie. A lot of fun.
Are you in that?
I'm not in it. I'm never in.
Just too hot to be in that film.
As Philip Noyce, the director from Australia, once said, "Steve, that's why you and I are behind the camera."
Because I didn't get a call either. I don't know what happened.
Well, they shot a good chunk of it at the studios in Channel 36, and we have a tendency of hanging out there a bit.
Yes. Yeah, Jack Black stayed in character the whole time. The character's from Poland, so I believe he called me the Tsar of Cinema, and he yes. loved PBS, and we were at Rhode Island PBS and the Columbus Theater, and so that's happening. There was another film that was called The Midnighters, directed, actually two brothers.
The Ramsey brothers.
Julius did The Walking Dead series, and mm-hmm. his brother Alston. And that film is going to be premiering here on the East Coast at the Rhode Island International Film Festival in August.
Oh, there we go. And speaking of the Rhode Island International Film Festival, that's coming up. Mm-hmm. And what dates are involved with that?
This year it's August 8th through the 13th.
All right. So just a little over a month away. And that's something that's going to take place at PPAC this year, right?
PPAC is our opening night. Actually, yeah. We have locations across the state. I think at our last count, we're about 14 locations.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we have you come back and talk just about the film festival and the things that are going to be happening without, do a special show on it.
Oh, I'll take it. I should mention, Stephen has a lot of activity during the festival as well.
Well, you can both come back. Well,
Stephen does the Rhode Island Film Forum. And actually, if we come back, Stephen can tell you who our special guests are this year.
Yes, we reached out to some very legendary filmmakers.
Okay.
Last year we had Karen Allen from Raiders of the Lost Ark, and we had David Permit, who produced Hacksaw Ridge.
I had heard that Jimmy Stewart might come back.
He could be here. You know, you never know, Mike.
Stephen has broken out his Ouija board. It will be a long distance flight.
All right. Well, let's get to the summer blockbusters portion of the show. And George, you put together, as usual, a great list of movies and the scores from those movies. Tell us what you have for us first. I think it's going to be something that's in the theaters right now.
It's still in the theaters, and it actually in the U.S. was released on Blu-ray DVD. It's still playing all over internationally, and at this point, its box office is over $1.2
billion.
Billion
with a B.
Billion with
a
B.
Now, see, those are the numbers I can understand.
Just think, and the lead actress in this one, Emma Watson, is making nice residuals off this.
Right. She didn't make enough from Harry Potter, right?
Not enough.
This is just because she went to Brown. I think that's why her career is taking off now.
But see, that gives us a local connection to it.
That's right. And well, of course, we're talking about Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, and directed by Bill Condon, and who's a Canadian filmmaker, and interesting work that he's done in the past, including
Gods and Monsters. And I believe he's doing The Bride of Frankenstein.
Yes, he is.
Well, see how these two beautiful minds work together. Oh, that's a different movie. All right. Well, we're going to go to, let's go to get us in the mood. We'll go to the title song from Beauty and the Beast.
Tale as old as time, true as it can be, barely even friends, then somebody bends unexpectedly. Just a little change, small to say the least, both a little scared, neither one prepared. Beauty and the Beast. Ever just the same, ever a surprise.
Now in the mood with that Beauty and the Beast, beautiful music.
It's a tale as old as time.
Yes.
What's cool about this is that they re-envisioned the actual source material. If you go back to the 1940s, 1946, with the Jean Cocteau version of Beauty and the Beast, and you see some of the stylistic devices that were actually incorporated into this film, including the hands holding the candelabras.
Mm-hmm.
That's the classic scene walking down the hallway from the Cocteau version. That's in this film. They also did something unique. Remember, it went from a Cocteau version to a Disney animated version, then to a stage version, and now back to a live-action version, using a lot of CGI. Dan Stevens, who plays the Beast, is entirely CGI, including his costume.
Now, just take a moment, and we'll give this one. We'll throw this one over to Stephen. CGI for the people at home.
Computer graphic imaging.
All right. So the person isn't actually there.
No, the person could be there, and then they might have these little people might have seen them in the. Sometimes they're wearing blue leotard or green leotard, and they have these dots all over them. So there, it's a motion capture.
Mm-hmm.
It allows them to perform, and then that performance that's done in a live action setting is then taken onto a computer, and their face, for example, might be morphed into an animal.
Right,
but.
The
you
beast,
know, you, yeah, but yeah, what yeah. you still do is you still get the power of like their eyes and their movements, and it's just
and they've really perfected this over the years. Yes. If you look at the Lord of the Rings and the character of Gollum,
right,
and then you look at the Hobbit, the character of Gollum, even though they look the same, if you compare
Dobby.
Them,
Dobby, oh no, oh yeah, Lord of the Rings. I'm sorry, yeah. No,
you're thinking Harry Potter.
Yeah, because yeah. there was a difference in that too. About I'm sorry, Gollum.
Oh, yes, it's true.
And Dobby, and you could see how the generation in a brief. Amount of time.
A couple years.
Changed, yeah. right.
And it's much more credible and believable. And then you look at Avatar, which is entirely, all those creatures are CGI, except mm-hmm. it's still motion capture. One of the titles we're going to be playing here.
Planet of the Apes.
That is CGI as well. So in this case, they did something unique. They actually have the Beast singing. And that's my setup for the song, because Dan Stevens, who has become very popular with U.S. audiences through Downton Abbey, as well as Legion, which is a Marvel Universe story, mm-hmm. Really picked up a following this past year. Mm-hmm. Stevens plays the Beast and has his own number of Longing. And Evermore is a beautiful song that I think will become a standard, and it's new to the Beauty and the Beast universe.
All right, let's give it a listen.
It all. I was the master of my fate. I never needed anybody in my life. I learned the truth too late. I'll never shake away the pain. I close my eyes, but she's still there. I let her steal into my melancholy heart. It's more than I can bear. Now I know she'll never leave me, even as she runs away. She will still torment me, calm me, hurt me, move me, come what may. Waiting by an open door, I'll fool myself, she'll walk right in and be with me forevermore. I rage against the trials of love. I curse the fading of the light. Though she's already flown so far beyond my reach, she's never out of sight. Now I know she'll never leave me, even as she fades from view. She will still inspire me, be a part of everything I do. Waiting by an open door, I'll fool myself, she'll walk right in. And as the long, long nights begin, I'll think of all that might have been. Waiting here for
We are back on Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, having a very pleasant July evening, sitting with George Marshall and Steven Feinberg, talking about the big movie blockbusters. And we took a little commercial break there, and while we were on break, George brought up the fact that Steven might have mispronounced a name in the last segment. The character.
The character's name is Darby.
Sorry, say what?
Darby. I believe it's Darby.
I think it's Darby in Harry Potter.
I said Dobby, but I think it's Darby.
So we just wanted to put that out.
And Stephen also informed us that Darby is not from Britain, but from Canada.
Right. Well, that might be. We don't know who's from Canada.
Jimmy might say that it's Darby.
Now, Jimmy. Jimmy Stewart's added to the list of people that have been here. Let's get on with the movies and Pirates of the Caribbean, George.
Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. It's still in theaters. It's actually doing better box office than anticipated. Reason, a lot of the critics in the U.S. got tied to Johnny Depp's personal issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that surfaced in terms of audience reaction to the film. It happened before with the Alice in Wonderland remake. Thing is, though, overseas, they don't see U.S. reviews. They're not reading Rotten Tomatoes or RottenTomatoes.com for you that want to read reviews.
Plus, they know it's a true story.
It was filmed in Canada.
Dobby was the chief photographer. And anyway, so Pirates still continues the original Gore Verbinski that created.
Now, this is what, the fourth one or fifth one?
Fifth one.
Okay.
Yeah, fifth one. And it goes back to the roots, and it actually brings back some of the original characters and brings closure as well to those characters. It does set it up for a future, but on the other hand, this is a nice closure point for the Pirates' legacy. And as you know, they've incorporated pirates right into the theme parks. Indeed, when they were actually pushing this, Johnny Depp made an appearance on the Pirates ride in Disneyland, and it's online. You can actually see this. The ride's going through. They're in their boats, and they look. There, what's supposed to be an animatronic of Johnny Depp in, it becomes alive.
That must have been.
And interacts with those people. It's funny as heck.
Hmm.
And the fact that he had a sense of humor to do that says a lot. But the film has done actually excellent box office. It's a lot of fun, and we're going to be playing the opening theme of Dead Man.
And if I can just say, when I was I went to London to Pinewood Studios, where they're doing Dark Shadows, and Johnny was the Barnabas character,
right?
And I got an opportunity to meet with him and his kids. He was the nicest guy,
really.
And yep, and he even had this girl. And I want to think. I don't know if she was from Yugoslavia.
I think she was from Canada.
No. She actually had a what do they call it when you're ill of health, and it was a Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Oh yeah.
And she came, and he treated her. It was really special. He was very, very nice, and his kids were great, Jack and Lily.
Well, great. All right, let's listen to the
Dead Men Tell No Tales.
That was Pirates of the Caribbean. Now we're on to one of the movies that's made a lot of news because it's a female director, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And yeah. What's amazing about this is that this has gone beyond anyone's expectations. The director, Patty Jenkins, has just crafted a film that's not only entertaining, but has become a message for young girls across the globe. I mean, this film has been racking up box office. I think it has legs. It's been beating out a lot of the competition on a weekly basis. And it's interesting because it goes beyond its origins, where the characters were introduced for this film in Batman versus Superman. And that was considered a dark film, not a really accessible film. And this character, the Wonder Woman character, was probably the lightest piece in that and the most engaging. So it was something that audiences actually built anticipation. The performances are solid. The music by Rupert Gregson-Williams is really excellent. And I think you want to go back to this universe again after you see this movie. Now, I confess, I've seen it twice. And it's still held up in the second viewing.
You know what's important, too? It validates. It's always been, you know, a challenge for women to get the salaries that men do, et cetera, because they say that they don't bring the box office punch. But this film validates that a good movie, well told, well done, can, you know, attract a worldwide audience and become box office, a box office treasure, which is only going to elevate and duplicate, because there's going to be a lot more strong women characters that can get out in the mainstream and hopefully have a wide audience. And
yeah, this it'll propel the desire of other women to get involved.
Right.
All right. We have a song from Wonder Woman.
It's Wonder Woman's Wrath.
All right. right. That was Wonder Woman. Now to a movie that I remember long ago and far away. A guy named Charlton Heston, I believe, was in the first one.
Get your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
Right. And that was in the same time that he was in Soylent Green as People.
Oh, yes.
And the Omega Man, right?
And Omega Man,
and
all those movies.
The original was directed by Franklin Schaffner.
Yep.
20th Century Fox, Arthur P. Jacobs production, that one was. And Rod Serling did an adaptation on, that's what was that little twist in the screenplay.
There you go. Yeah,
and it's interesting, too, you mentioned Soylent Green. That was Edward G. Robinson's final film.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he, spoiler, dies in the film and becomes Soylent Green because Soylent Green is people.
Right.
But that was to prove that it actually what was actually going on. So he sacrificed himself for the greater good. Yeah. But consider his track as a career artist.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And then he ends on a very upbeat note as a humanitarian.
Well, this is interesting. Let's go with Edward G. Robinson. Edward G. Robinson was supposed to play Dr. Zaius in the original Planet of the Apes. But, and they did a, Dick Zanuck, who was a friend of mine, he was the president, he had them do makeup tests. So he had the makeup test done with Charlton Heston and Edward G. Robinson to see if they could pull it off. And then Edward G. Robinson, who was not feeling well, said, there's no way I can do this makeup.
Yeah.
And then it went to Maurice Evans.
Hmm.
So that's a little...
Well, there you go. Background on the original Planet of the Apes.
There
now fast forward to about 25 other renditions.
So then we came to... there was a reboot of the Planet of the Apes, the Rise of the Planet of the Apes, the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and coming out in a few weeks is the War for the Planet of the Apes.
And this, just to go back, we also had television versions with some of the original
series.
Actors.
Right. Yep. Series. With Roddy McDowall.
That's
Roddy
what I mean. McDowell. It was a whole bunch of,
Yes.
But the difference here is striking because not having John Chambers makeup, this is the guy that created the Planet of the Apes makeup for the original, who also did Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
What you're looking at is, again, CGI motion capture. And again, it's gone to a point where it's much more credible, and I'll let you pick it up from
right,
there.
Right, you know, what has happened is from the reviews that it just came out yesterday on the War for the Planet of the Apes, they say it's amazing, that the story's great, it looks beautiful, and that there's a potential for a Best Actor Academy Award. And
really?
Yep, and the music by Michael Giacchino, who also did the Star Trek movie music.
Mm-hmm. He's doing a lot of the major films. He did Rogue One recently for the Star Wars franchise.
So it's you know, this, the music that we're actually hearing is from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, but it's to get us in the mode.
And that is because they will not be releasing this until July 7th after this show is done.
Right. And by the way, just one more thing. Andy Serkis, who plays Caesar, that's the performance that they're talking about. He has played King Kong. And that, again, is the motion picture, motion capture. He played Gollum in...
Not Dobie?
He played Gollum in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. He played King Kong. He's played Caesar. And just a
slew of characters.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you can even find him playing a humanoid character in some of the other stuff that
he played a human in King Kong.
Yeah.
But he also played Kong, which I thought was a phenomenal performance. Because I had feelings.
He was in The Adventures of Tintin.
Tintin, yes. Yeah.
Where he actually looked like himself, but as a CGI character.
Right.
All right.
But here he plays Caesar. And the music by Michael Giacchino, who has worked with J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
And now...
One of my favorite scores is Super 8 that he did.
Yes.
That's such a beautiful score.
All right. We'll listen to the Planet of the Apes music and then take a short break and be back with more with the George and Steven Show.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, sitting with George Marshall and Steven Feinberg, talking about summer blockbusters. And for the we've been talking about going to the theater and seeing movies or seeing them after they've been released. But in this case, we're going to the small screen, right? Mm-hmm.
And the reason we're doing that is because this presentation on HBO has gathered so much popular appeal. And I won't mince words, it's Game of Thrones. And the thing about Game of Thrones is that it's now ahead of the books that have been released. So audiences are wondering when Mr. Martin is going to release the book to tie into the series, or we're going to have to see everything happening in the book before it's actually released and it'll be on screen. The music by Raman Djawadi is just absolutely powerful and intense. He also did Westworld, which has become very popular, and a number of films. He's from Germany, but of note for those listening here in this region, he went to Berklee School of Music.
Okay, so a Boston guy.
Yes.
All right.
We now have absorbed him into our culture.
He's close enough to us.
Exactly.
And since he's from Germany, he's gone to Boston, we'll actually make him a Rhode Island person.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We can acquire
plus
him.
If they're famous enough, they become,
exactly.
Now, if you've lived here for 30 years, we don't consider you. But if you're famous enough, all right, that's how that works. All right, so Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and just to whet people's appetites, because it's coming up this July. And again, we don't know where it's going to end. We do know that the next season after this will be the last season, and it'll be a short season because of the way they're consolidating the episodes. Hmm. But this year, we're supposed to get some answers to rather pressing questions of who lives and who dies.
Oh. Have Game of Thrones, and we'll be looking forward to that coming out. You know, with both experts here in the studio, I can ask you a question. A lot of people have the notion that sometimes the original movie is great, and then the second one isn't so great, or the third one is even worse, or whatever.
Like the sequels, you mean?
Yeah. And but that's not true in this next one that we're about to hear, right?
Absolutely not.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy. And for those of you into the music mixes, we are introduced to the second music mix that was left to the Chris Pratt character, the Star-Lord, by his mother, who was married to this, turns out to be a god figure, which we discover
in this film. Don't give it away.
Is that a spoiler?
It's not a spoiler. If I told you what happens, then that's a spoiler.
All right.
But it's worth seeing. We decided instead of running a piece of the actual music score, background music, that we take one of the popular music pieces that is played throughout the course of this film. So
One of the songs.
All right. This is for those of you enjoying your 4th of July weekend.
Yeah.
Summer fun.
And it's more than a feeling.
Okay.
Morning. Today's forecast calls for blue skies. tell us why you had to hide away for so long? Where did we go wrong? Please tell us why you had to hide away for so long. Where did we go wrong? Hey there, Mr. Blue, it's a place to be with you. Look around, see what you do. Everybody smiles at you. Hey there, Mr. Blue, it's a place to be with you. Look around, see what you do.
We definitely have a problem when George and Steve are here because we have too much fun and time flies. Yeah. And all of a sudden, we're at the end of the hour. We have time for one more piece of music. But I'm going to put you on record as both confirming that you're going to come back sometime this summer, maybe just in a couple weeks, because we'll have some more stuff to talk about. The film festival, definitely.
We'd love to, definitely.
You know, we'll have to have you back in a couple weeks and talk about that and other things that we're looking forward to. And
beautiful.
What are you looking forward to the most this summer?
You know, I'm looking forward always to the Rhode Island International Film Festival is one of my favorite weeks of the year. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing the release of The Polka King and Midnighters. And mm-hmm. there's also a TV show that we've done called The History of Cars. And there's some other stuff coming that we can share soon. And I'm looking forward to other films like Blade Runner.
Oh, some things coming that we can share soon. He knows more than he's telling.
Always.
I can't divulge. We have some other projects in the works.
We just put him in a room with Dobby and see how the truth comes out. Right. Actually, we're both looking forward to Dunkirk. Is coming out this summer.
Okay.
And also,
tell me about that.
Dunkirk is the Battle of Dunkirk during WW2. Christopher Nolan, who did Inception, and he's rumored to be doing possibly the next James Bond film.
Really?
He directed it.
Oh.
Terrific director. And the other film I'm looking forward to is the new sequel to Blade Runner.
By Denis Villeneuve.
Yes, who did Arrival.
Which was a brilliant film. And we actually have a connection with the director because one of the first things he did...
He came to the United States once.
Yes, he did, as a matter of fact. No, what's interesting is most of these filmmakers today start by doing short films as their overture. And one of his early short films was called Next Floor. And we had the U.S. premiere of Next Floor, 35mm. We showed it at PPAC.
Yeah.
And it's a really visionary piece. You can see the talent right there on the screen. But we made a mistake because we show this last in the evening, and it deals with overconsumption, and people are eating and eating and eating in this film, necessarily palatable material. And we showed that at the end of that slot. That was the end of the festival opening, and then we went into a Taste of Rhode Island, and no one wanted to eat anything. So I learned my lesson then and there. In terms of telling a story arc, but always ending on an up-tempo.
And the year before, they did Soylent Green, and then they had the Taste of Rhode Island. Didn't work out. What's going on?
We just have a problem with that. Right. But anyway, we do have a connection with the filmmaker. So for us, it's a great thing to see how his career has blossomed and grown. And the fact that he's doing Blade Runner 2049, and we may or may not learn whether or not Deckard is...
That's Harrison Ford, he's in it. Ryan Gosling,
yep,
he's in
and it. We do not know whether or not he was a replicant, which is what everyone was questioning at the end of Blade Runner.
Okay.
So he's marching in the shoes of Ridley Scott.
All right, we're going to listen to that, but I want to thank you both for coming in. Great to see you again, and look forward to seeing you in a few weeks. Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thanks, George. All right. And the rest of you, we'll see you next time on Conducting Conversations.
Happy Fourth.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shore of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the 10,000 gates. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears.
Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.